Many of you don't know this, but my breast milk is a magical elixir for kittens. Yes, yes, it is. Go to my website, 2-day free shipping.
On this episode of The Commercial Break.
I mean, being a playwright, you know, I really wanted to be a playwright, so I'd send the scripts out, and as I've said time and again, if you're writing a play, it was faster, I thought, I learned over time, that if you actually put your play in a bottle and took the bottle and corked it and threw it into a river, or
somebody would
find that faster and read it faster than any of the fucking theaters would do.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Oh, yeah, guys and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green. This is my dear friend and the coordinator of all things wonderful, Kristen Joy Hoadley. Best to you, Chrissy.
Best to you, Brian.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. It's a TCB Infomercial Tuesday, and I could not be more excited to have the next guest on, and
I know.
Is Mr. fucking Lewis Black.
Wow.
Now, I know that some of you out there are going to be like, Mr. fucking who? And I'm going to say, Mr. fucking Lewis Black, pause the episode, do your homework. Because he is a legend among legends.
Yeah.
He is one of the best living, I guess, commentarians, comedians.
Comments, yeah.
That ever graced this earth during our lifetime, including Carlin, Pryor, Rock. I mean, there's so many we can go on and on and on, but he is one of the greats. And if you grew up in like the time of Comedy Central, Daily Show, the heyday of the Daily Show, or Comedy Central, then you will know exactly mm-hmm. who Lewis Black is. He's super fucking fantastic. He says the word fuck every 3 seconds.
He's so funny.
He's perfect for the commercial break.
Yes, he is perfect.
And I don't care what age the guy is. I'm not an ageist because I'm an old man too. I'm not an ageist. I want Lewis Black on my show.
Oh,
so
yeah.
When they said, can you, will you, is it possible that you might? And I was like, I would fucking walk on glass to have Lewis Black.
I know. I looked at our schedule and saw him on there. I was like, what? We've got Lewis Black?
I know. Honestly, there's like some people where you go, really?
Yeah.
He's coming here?
I know.
They wanted that? Somebody decided that was a good fucking idea? All right. Okay.
Yeah,
I'll do
it.
Let's
take it.
Lewis Black is a stand-up comedian. He's a playwright. He's a writer. He's an actor.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in so many movies, I don't even know where to start. But I think probably what most people of a certain age would know him for is his stand-up comedy and his commentary mm-hmm. on life, politics, love, I mean, everything under the sun. He's got this certain je ne sais quoi, which
yes,
is
he, does.
He uses fuck like nobody else does. He moves his hands in weird ways, and I love it. He's incredible. He's just so good at what he does. He takes the world, he spins it around that brilliant mind of his, and he spits it out in a way that's simple to understand
mm-hmm.
and fucking hilarious. And
what an honor.
I have to think that maybe Lewis Black has shaped some of my political thinking,
yeah.
some of my thinking about reality and the perception of reality, just some of my thinking in general, because I am one of those kids who grew up when Comedy Central was just coming online,
oh, yeah.
and he was one of the first. He was on The Daily Show very early on. We'll ask him when, but he was on The Daily Show very early on, and I think he survived through the Jon Stewart years, if I'm not
yeah,
mistaken.
Yeah, he did. No, he was on there.
Yeah, and so now...
Insomniac,
that's right. Mm-hmm. I think Politically Incorrect, was he on maybe... No, that was Bill Maher. I'm sorry, that's
Conan.
Conan, that's right.
Yep.
He was on Conan.
Yep.
He was a guest, a regular guest on Conan.
Mm-hmm.
So the greats know him. They love him. And so I'm interested to dig in and see, you know, why exactly he's deciding to retire. I mean, listen, you know, he's not a whippersnapper. He's not 22 years old. It's not like he's got, you know, 50 more years of stand-up comedy in him. But he's on his final tour.
Well, I would say he can kind of pick and choose after this.
I think there's probably... Yeah, I don't think he's, like, retiring. I just think he's... Maybe the tour thing is, okay, I've done it and for many, many
yes,
fucking years.
Yeah,
and now I'm kind of over it. Yeah, and I want to be done with it. And we'll, I'm sure, get into that, too. But the great Lewis Black at lewisblack.com is where you can find tickets to his tour. He's on through the year. He's doing like every other night. He's doing a show, it seems like, until the end of the year. And he has special tickets, FUCKU tickets, fuck you tickets that you can buy.
I
can't wait
that.
To ask him about that. Also, he's also got two specials that I think you might be interested in. One is called Thanks for Risking Your Life to Be Here, essentially. and that's on YouTube, completely free. And that is a special that was filmed on March 13th, 2020, the week that everybody started really fucking freaking out about what was then called coronavirus. And then he did another special just last year called Tragically, I Need You. And I think he's referring to the audience, like, Tragically, I Need You, right? And they're bookends. They're like two different, very timely perspectives on what was going on. One when everything was shutting down, one when everything was, you know, starting back up. And they're hilarious, they're pointed, they're interesting, they're thought-provoking, and only Lewis Black can do it in the only Lewis Black way.
He's got his own style.
Yeah. If you're looking for, like, someone to be a smooth, you know, talking orator like this, that's not Lewis Black. But if you're looking for someone to, like, tickle your brain in the right spots, that is Lewis Black. And I'm so glad and grateful that he's here. LewisBlack.com, and then go watch those two specials on YouTube. And he's got Rantcast, too, also, which maybe we'll talk to him about that. So, Chrissy, I do have an idea.
Yes,
Brian. Let's go into our awkward transition phase. Why don't we just take a minute? We'll listen to some of our sponsors who feed our mouths and our children. And then when we come back, through the magic of telepodcasting, Lewis Black, the great Lewis Black. I'm going to start saying that anytime I say his name.
Yeah, the great.
The great Lewis Black will be here right in front of us, Chrissy, and we'll get to have a conversation with him. Could you imagine?
I can't wait.
As a young budding little Kristen Hoadley watching Comedy Central, that someday this man who was just like melting your mind would all of a sudden be in front of you. No? Well, it's all happening. It's all happening right
dreams
after.
Dreams do come true.
They really do. It's all happening right after these messages. We'll be back.
Okay, you guys, I have an idea. Why don't we take a break? Gotcha. This is the break. And you already know when you hear my sexy voice, it's time to whip your phone out and follow us on Instagram or skip the ads at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCV Podcast. And of course, you know, if you want to get involved, you can always give us a call or text us at 212-433-3TCB. That is 212-433-3822. And guess what? I finally have information on TCB Live. So the links are in the show notes, but let me tell you right now, you can come see us at Dania Beach Improv on Tuesday, September 24th, or at the Funny Bone Orlando on Wednesday, September 25th. It's gonna be fab. So go buy your tickets and we'll see you in Florida.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. And I do have to ask you a question. As a long-suffering Orioles fan, can you believe where you are right now?
It allows me to weep publicly. It's really unbelievable. I mean, but it took a while. I mean, partly I was enraged part of the time because our catcher should have been up sooner. And, you know, they were fooling her, you know, and then also, could you hire can you pay for some pitching? Can you at least pretend that we're in it? It's like, literally, you're going to continue to do this. And what's really amazing is that they've screwed that fan base over and it's not been, I mean, it's been long, but not in terms of other teams that have been really.
Sure.
You know, and these guys, you could still get like a $10 or $20 or $30 package that allows you to go to all the games in August and sit in the cheap seats.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. We live in Atlanta where our Pornhub overlords charge every dollar, then have the audacity to call it the Atlanta Braves when it's actually 30 miles outside of the city center. It's fucked up.
It is out, isn't it? Is it near the Cobb?
Yeah, it's near the Cobb. It's right over there near the Energy Center. It's actually across the highway from the Energy Center, which is a great location if you're, you know, white and rich enough to afford those seats. But, you know, it lacks, in my opinion, the character of the old stadium, especially the Ted Turner Stadium that was built for the Olympics, which was just an incredible place to see baseball. And, you know, whatever. It's all homogenized and corporatized and big dollars at this point. And I guess
put that Cobb Energy Center out there, which they said, where you're going to perform out there. now.
Oh, it, yeah.
To, you know, you go to a city and you want to perform. I am no interest in performing in the suburbs, you jackasses. I got out of the suburbs. You live there for a while and then that's enough. And then you kind of realize, no.
In the city.
Have it in. So, you know, you want to perform, which I did for a while. I've got to perform and, you know, I was at the House of Blues there and we did a couple of the other theaters downtown. And then we're now I'm out at the Cobb Energy Center, which has no energy.
No.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So right about this. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a beautiful place. If you're going to go see opera or the fucking orchestra or, you know, Frankie Valli and the Dead Tops or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, it's not the place you want to see Lewis Black or your favorite, you know, Rebirth 90s band that once was popular and not popular again. And that's what they do. But, you know, they have to make money somehow. So I guess that's where they put it. And Atlanta is a perfectly lovely city with lots of great theaters, with lots of great history. And they just keep building more further and further away and calling it Atlanta. But that's a rant, and you're better at that than I am.
No, but I'm glad to hear it because it really did. It's one of those things I've wondered, you know, you go out there. I've got a few friends who you know, live down there, but you don't really, you know, it's kind of like, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we all thought when the Braves Stadium was announced. In Cobb County, we were like, are they the Cobb County Braves now or are the Marietta Braves or are they just still the Atlanta Braves? But you can't argue with success. And we are spoiled with success as a long suffering Cubs fan until a couple of years ago. I feel you on Baltimore. I have to ask you a question right off the get. You put an Instagram reel, a YouTube short out that I saw a couple of months ago. Maybe it was like back in April or something where you said, hey, politicians, can you give us a fucking break for the summer? Don't say anything. Go to do your barbecues and leave us all the fuck alone.
I love that.
How's that going in your estimation?
I did it again. And then I did it. And last night I was performing in, Cleveland and I just launch into it. I mean, it's disgusting. And it starts with the fact that they go, this is what enrages me. Well, you know, we only have 100 days. That's, you know, seriously. You okay?
Yeah.
You've already added 100 days to Christmas. That didn't help. It's like literally, do you not think we're capable? And if we need this much time, then there really is something wrong that we are picking people that we don't know, that yes. Should be people on the table we already know. I mean, in part, when I was growing up, and now I'll sound like, you know, an aging fart. when I was growing up, you knew these. I mean, Nixon, you knew. And he tried, and then he tried again, and then he won, you know, and he won.
Yeah.
You know, these people kind of stayed in the loop. Now it's like, okay, gone, you know, Romney, okay, gone. He's there for a, you know, and in comparison, you know, when you look in terms of what we're dealing with, you know, really you got rid of him? He was kind of like the middle guy, you idiots.
Yeah.
You fucking idiots. Probably in the middle. And, you know, except for whatever, you know, we can argue, you know, this, that, or the other, you know, but basic, and you go, no, that's enough, you know.
He was a centrist and had long been known as a guy who works across the aisle and had worked across the aisle during his presidency to get some shit actually fucking done.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, but we can argue up and down about, you know, whether or not he's fit for the job or not fit. And I think it's a valid argument to have. Right. But it was like one shitty performance. Good night, Joe. See you later. Talk to you later. You have a really interesting, Chrissy and I were talking about this before you came on. I think we both remember you because of your long stint on The Daily
Yes.
Show. That's when we grew up. That's when our minds were blossoming. That's when we got interested in the world around us. And we're also cable kids, right? So we saw The Daily Show, Comedy Central.
And politics, really.
And politics. And that's when I became a super fan of yours. Like, if you were on The Daily Show, I needed to watch it. And it was appointment TV for me. You were like a playwright and you were in Jacob's fucking Ladder, which is one of the most fucked up movies I've ever seen in my entire life. What did you play in Jacob's Ladder? You were the doctor?
The doctor. And one of the reasons, the hook, I think, that I'm in that and stayed in that. But, you know, and, you know, a lot of the times you get edited out and it's a small, very small role. But there was a dog on the set, and a great dog. And they were paying the dog more than me. And some of the other actors, the dog was getting a lot every day, but I was, but the dog was going to be in the scene. And the thing was, is that they brought the dog in. Now the dog's a part of the movie. And the thing is Tim Robbins, who was the lead, didn't really like dogs. Well, didn't want the dog around or whatever, but he, you know, I hate to, he doesn't like dogs. But apparently he didn't, and or whatever. And but so they really, the dog was going to be in the scene. And he was in the tub, and I'm sitting there, and I went, this dog's going to be great in this. Because so I'm hanging out all day with the dog, and I'm going to be sure this dog likes me enough that he's going to be not a problem when we get in there. And he certainly wasn't going to be, he's a well-trained, you know, he's getting paid more than me. He probably,
he's a professional.
If you just watch that clip again, the best acting done in that clip is the dog who's got, of all of us, has the most sincere look on of all of us. The most commitment comes from the canine.
Yeah.
And so that was how it ended up. I think that the clip stayed in the movie, and you know, because all they really needed was him in the tub being in an ice bath or something.
Yeah, right? I remember this scene in the movie. The guy's pouring ice on him, and he's freaking out, and the whole thing is going. They say never work with animals or children, but maybe in this case they helped out.
Oh, it was great.
Was that your first major motion picture role?
No, the first major motion picture role was. It was Hannah and Her Sisters.
Oh, that's right.
That's a classic.
And look, and here's another one of those crazy things. Julia Taylor was Woody Allen's casting person, and she's pretty remarkable, and she's on top of things. And she approached me and the friend of mine who's passed away, who we had a place in New York that we did theater in, and he did music, I did, and I was writing plays and kind of hosting. And so she came in and basically said, you know, you're going to be in a Woody Allen film at some point. You should. I went, well, that's, you know, like, yeah, right, okay. And the next thing I know, we're casting Hannah and Her Sisters. If you watch the scene that we're in, it's me, it's my first movie. It's Rusty's first movie. I believe John Turturro's in the scene. It's his first movie.
Whoa.
There's like Julie Kavner. It's not her first, but it's, but what's her name? Julia Louise Dreyfus's her first movie.
Whoa.
It's the scene where they're walking down the hallway. He's a writer for kind of Saturday Night Live or works on it.
Yeah.
Woody does. Chris Clemens, who was in a bunch of things that you've seen on television, and we're all in that scene. And if you watch, pretty much there's about eight of us, and it was everybody's first movie, and they're all people who went on,
wow,
had careers.
When you got out of college, I read that you were a playwright, and then you were working this theater. Is that the same theater you're talking about? You were there for like 5 or 6 years until it closed or got new management or whatever.
Yeah, no, and also they kind of thought we were that's unbelievable. My friend who's still it's in its 46th year.
Okay,
West Bank Cafe, and downstairs there was a. What would be called the cabaret space. I hate that word. It just, you think of, you know, stuff that I don't like.
Gotcha. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. So, but yeah. It was really a theater space, had about 100 seats, had a bar. And we did, and the two owners that my friend Steve Olson called the Null and Void, who were the two owners of the place, they thought we were making a fortune downstairs doing one act plays. That's what
That's a quick way to get that. When my dad said, son, you're going to go to school and you're going to be a one-act playwriter.
Yeah, that's really, and are you going to build balsa wood planes? I mean, it's like, it's stupid. We were surviving. I mean, and it was kind of amazing because we did there was no place for, at that point in time, we started this in the early, the early 80s, 83, 84. And we had the actors who were there. I mean, James Gandolfini, one of his first performances was there. The writers are really Aaron Sorkin, his first.
Jesus. God, those are
Alan
major
Ball,
names.
Who True Blood.
His
first American Beauty. All of his first work was done there, all of it. There's a number of other writers who are just straight up playwrights that you're known for playwriting. And we had everybody because there was no places for people to work. And
so you were just a home for all of these burgeoning creative types that were doing playwrights. I mean, Aaron Sorkin, just one name, and you could say, wow, that was a success.
Yeah, and he actually was on CBS's Sunday Morning and talked about the fact that he owed the success, you know, that was the reason it was from that moment that he got his agent, and his agent got A Few Good Men done on Broadway within a year. But otherwise there was nothing fucking going on in New York.
It was just it was kind of a dead scene in the 80s, right? It was all Studio 54 and punk rock, CBGB, right?
Yeah, I mean, there were certain things, there were certain moments of certain plays that were done, but very little. And so we were this place, and what we did was you know, if somebody had to, we worked over the on the premise, you know, somebody comes in, they do something that's good, they recommend somebody, great, and we would do them. And so a lot of it, we didn't, you know, it was all about, and you bring the audience in, and these people wanted an audience, and they'd bring people in. And so when we were charging, like, I mean, it's 100 years ago, but still we were charging $3, $5. We were not charging a ton, and we were paying our actors, and we had a contract with Equity. It was crazy.
Oh, geez. And so the Nolan Void thought that you were making $1 billion under their noses, and so they pushed you to give them more of a cut of the revenue, and you're like, well, shit, dude, I'm not making any. I'm living in a fucking, studio apartment on the West End. Yeah.
The manager, who's now owner of the place, Steve Olsen, they fired him because they thought he was making it hand over fist. So the place gets wiped out because he moves up the street where he bartends. Now we're all up the street drinking there, and the theater, nobody shows up. Nobody shows up to eat there because it really was and still is a place where you could walk in and see, you know, Al Pacino, or you could see, any number of people, Robert Sean Leonard. I can go to Ethan Hawke. There's a ton of people who just hang out and eat there. Mm-hmm. And it's still one of those places because across the street, there are a whole bunch of off-Broadway theaters or off-Broadway, really. And so it was really became kind of a classic institution, and right now they're in the midst of they just have not recovered from the pandemic, and they're trying to close it down, and we'll see if that actually happens. But
that's a fucking scene. James Gandolfini, Aaron Sorkin, Ethan Hawke all hanging out having lunch in a 100-seat theater. I guess that's just like a snapshot in time, like so many stories that you hear about. I've never been lucky. I'm going to end up at a Chili's eating, fucking $5 shitteritas or whatever. There's no Ethan Hawke or James Gandolfini sitting there.
It was really something. And it was just, you know, it's that whole thing. It's like, you guys, look, the one thing you learn from what you're doing in this business, what I'm doing in this business, but you end up being successful because you're in the right place at the right time. And it's
true.
Totally fucking timing.
Absolutely.
And it's really unbelievable because that's what occurred there. We just, you know, you go in, we went, well, you know, let's see if people want to do this. And then they all flood in. And so all of a sudden, you know, Edie Falco is there. I mean, you kind of go, what the fuck?
Fuck.
You know them. You know, you're showing up on your stage and you're going, oh my God, you know.
Let me ask you, because I think you're on to, I think you're absolutely right about this, is that most of success is timing, a little bit of talent, and also persistence. Because if you're not there at the right time, but you keep chopping the wood, you may find yourself when the timber falls, right? I mean, that's just the way that it is. Like, we're 600 episodes into this. It didn't come easy, right? It didn't come easy, and I'm still, I hope there's lots of, you know, wood to be chopped here, but I don't know. I'm getting old.
I read your history. It's true. You did, you know, you went this and then tried that. You know, you go up all these blind alleys.
Yeah, that's true. See what works.
you are writing, and do you find yourself, you're just so comically talented. I don't want to compare you to anybody because that's cheap conversation. But I do have to say, I put you in this, like, in the same regard as like a Pryor or a Carlin. You're a commentarian. You comment on the world around you in a very funny and unique way. Did you start doing stand-up while you were doing playwriting too? Were you doing that on the side?
I was doing it on the side. It was completely on the side. It was being done. It's, you know, like some people collect stamps.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was really crazy. I'm kind of going, I was doing it partly because it fascinated me. And it didn't matter. I mean, being a playwright, you know, I really wanted to be a playwright. So I'd send the scripts out. And as I've said time and again, if you're writing a play, it was faster, I thought. I learned over time that if you actually put your play in a bottle, into a bottle, and took the bottle and corked it and threw it into a river or
somebody a better chance.
Find that faster and read it faster than any of the fucking theaters would do. So I did the stand up in part two so I could write something and get it out there.
Yeah,
so I'm waiting like 2 years for them to say, "Go fuck yourself, you're an idiot. Don't work. You have no interest." And so it was a way in which I could do my writing. And I would go on stage and read stuff just to, you know, and read comic things that I wrote that were comic, and I'd comment. And I started asking, and then I started to work rooms that, you know, nobody in their right mind would work. You know, it was like I wouldn't work comedy clubs. I tried.
Yeah.
And they enraged me because it was like, well, you're not one of the first 15 who showed up. Well, you don't fucking want, you know, you should let us know that.
Yeah.
You know, because I was performing once at Catch, a rising star. And the first time I performed there, this was the end of, I didn't go back. They wanted me to do, I was there 11 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock. I had a pretty good set. And I said, well, who do I talk to? They say, oh, no, you've got to be the first five that are seen. And I went, nobody, this is, are you shitting me? I'm broke at the time, and I have friends who are broke. Now I've put together enough money to have my friends come so that to see if they think I'm psychotic doing things. But I'm putting out a small fortune as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I'm going broke to be there, and the person's not there. So I said, I'm not going to do that. So I found spaces around, in part like the West Bank eventually, where I could go and just do stuff and not have to worry about, you know, bringing people or doing anything. And as long as I wasn't making money, what difference did it make?
Sure.
And so are you just like chopping away at it? If you have such a unique style and a unique voice and a unique opinion, and that's probably just part of the DNA of who you are. But when you get, and I know we're fast forwarding a lot, but when, how did you get on the Daily Show? And when you get that, I think quite frankly, when I saw you for the first time, I was like, holy shit, this guy's on fire.
Yeah.
He's fucking funny and he's got something to say.
Yeah.
And I would imagine, at least in my brain, it takes a long time to just learn how to like tailor it in a way that's interesting, funny, and saying something.
Yeah. A lot of it came from working at the West Bank because I would open, I became comfortable on stage there because otherwise I was a wreck on stage. I mean, it was, you got to relax. And I found that to be the toughest part. especially. And so a lot. So I was introducing every show. So there was no you take out the realm of you don't have to worry about if you're funny. So you can now be funny because nobody expects you to be funny.
Yeah.
That way. And we would have a show at midnight on Saturdays that was free. And Rusty would play music, and he was the composer of the place, and he would do these songs that were hysterical and also straight stuff. I would do stand up. There were Warren Light, who eventually won a Tony for his writing. He wanted to be a comic. I wanted to be a playwright. Now,
exactly.
It's really silly. He was a terrific comic. So they would come in, people would come in, and then we did it for free because it was Studio 54 time.
Yeah,
there were all these places around town where none of my friends, and especially actors and people in the business, couldn't get in. So the people would come pouring in there because it was free, and we would do these shows, and that was where I kind of honed the material. And I'd go on stage with just pieces of the newspaper. I'd have like 10 things that I ripped out of the newspaper and just go,
no shit,
and this, and that would be my act.
Yeah, and you just comment on what you were seeing,
yeah, and then if it landed, I would follow it out.
And wow. And probably because you were a playwright, because you had those writing skills and they were honed and you were doing the reps on the writing, you could smell a punchline coming in your perspective, in your voice. So you would look at an article, you'd say, oh, I know where I can go with this, or I know where I can go with it.
Yeah. And the one thing that's really interesting is that since then and what I've learned, I write on stage. That's where I write.
Okay.
I don't sit at home. I'll take a note. You know, there'll be something that really bugs me, you know, it's like, and I'll write it down. Anything that angers me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I immediately write it down.
Sounds a lot like me.
Now it's reached a point where there's no need to, I don't even need to, how do you get angry when it's just, it's a constant flow of bullshit.
Right.
If he's talking about childless cat women. I mean, what? We're supposed to take, and then they're going, well, I can't believe they're still stuck on it. They're stuck on it because it's insane.
It's fucking unreal. Yeah.
And yeah.
You know, it's more insane is that 30 years ago, this would have tanked any chance you had at a political career.
Yeah.
But what's insane is the excuse-making bullshit and then the continuation of saying the same exact thing over and over again with different words,
yeah,
trying to pretend like I really didn't mean what I said, but by the way, let me say it one more time, yeah, because I really did mean what I said.
Yeah.
He's a fucking asshole.
And then folks with children who should have more votes. That was the other one. That's really good. Yep. Folks who have children who don't even have the time to pay attention to what the fuck is out there
should, yes,
have more votes than the rest of us who don't have children and our noses are fucking shoved into this shit on a daily basis.
As a guy who has many children, I will tell you right now, I shouldn't be allowed to vote. I don't. I'm just constantly upset at something, and I could go either way at any moment. I could write in Walt fucking Disney right now, and it probably would make sense to me. How did you get connected with the Daily Show? You were on early. I think Craig Kilborn was, right?
I was on the first week.
The first week.
The first week. And it started with, we were in a studio without an audience, and Liz Winstead was the was the executive producer. She knew me. She was a comic. The great thing was that Liz, and she doesn't get the credit she should, and so I tout it all the time. She's the one who got the Comedy Central to buy this, and that's an extraordinary, because I had done it about I'd gone in to pitch, you know, a political kind of news show, and people just, what are you kidding me?
You're Comedy Central.
Yeah. But
it's ha-has on a Tuesday. Yeah.
She got it sold. And she had an executive, one of the producers. She was the exec producer. One of the producers was Hank Gallo, who knew me. So both of them knew me. you know, right place, right time. They knew, like you were saying, they knew I had material. I had a ton of material. Nobody knew who I was. And I was working, now I'm working clubs. I'm outside of the West Bank, and I'm working clubs around town, and I'm just honing my act to try to make it so that taking it from this room where I was kind of like, oh, he's psychotic, but isn't he cute, to, oh, this, I can transfer this into a into kind of comedy clubs.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And so they brought me in. And what we did the first 6-7 times was, until we got an audience, I would sit there and bring in stuff. And I would do, or if they had an idea, but mostly it was me. I'd come in, taking my material, and try to put it into an editorial form. And I would just sit at the desk, and then I would do it, because there was no audience. And then we'd do it again. And then they'd say, keep that, drop that, this will be good. Then I'd do it again. Great ending, great opening. Let's try to tighten up the middle. Do it 3 or 4 times, and then great, you got it. And that was the way we did it. And then they brought the audience in. Then I started writing it out. Hank helped me edit it, and some of the other writers came on board. And now it's on a, now we go to teleprompter.
Yeah.
And so I'm reading it. And there, if you, you know, you should get one of your children to learn this skill, which is to look at a screen and be able to read words, and so that their eyes aren't moving.
It's very difficult. We have tried to do this in the studio. It's very difficult. It's not a, it's a skill that doesn't comes abs, it's like unnatural in every way, shape, or form.
Your eyes or something, and kind of just
Well, you know,
very easy. I mean, you know, if I'd known this, I could have gone to the chase and been a fucking weatherman and just, you know, a funny weather guy.
I would have loved to have seen that.
But dressed in a gorilla suit.
Yes, please.
Weather guys, poor fucking weather guys. They don't do much, but and they're always wrong, Lewis. They're always fucking wrong. We have a guy here who's very famous. His name is Glenn Burns. He's as old as the sun. I mean, he's probably 102 years old. He looks great because of whatever, good genes, good doctors. I don't know, one of the two. But the guy is 100% wrong. Unless there's a tornado directly over your house, he'll let you know that 5 minutes afterwards. But you watch him because he's the guy. He's like the Glenn Burns guy. You're like, oh, I trust him. For what reason? I don't know. Because he's always wrong.
Forever. Yeah.
When you get to the Daily Show and you have all of this exposure, and I know that, you know, Comedy Central was not at the time HBO or ABC or NBC, but it is quite a bit of exposure to a very fertile audience. That's the moment when all of a sudden you kind of take out, your comedy career takes off. I have to imagine.
That was part of it. It was a combo of that. It was a combo of Dave Attell and I becoming the face of Comedy Central, because
that's right.
All of a sudden he's on the Insomniac.
Insomniac, mm-hmm. Late Night with Dave Attell. Yeah, yeah.
And really a great show. Brilliant.
That was a great show.
It was. It was a real breakthrough. I mean, nobody thought, but David was perfect. I'm doing this. Now they're putting, now I've got, I'm doing specials, because now I got a ton of material and I'm doing these half hour specials. So that's getting it out there. And then we become on Friday nights, they do interstitials. So there's a whole bunch of comics. And David or I or both of us would be the introers of that thing. That put me out there. Then Conan picks me up. I do more Conans than anybody at that time.
Yeah.
And the whole thing explodes.
It's just unbelievable. Because I was a teenager at that time. You really got embedded into my head. You and Dave. I think of Dave now. I look back on that show that he did, and I say, that was Anthony Bourdain before Anthony Bourdain did Anthony Bourdain, and just a little bit crazier, just a little bit wackier, right?
Yeah.
But it really was a version of Anthony Bourdain, this guy out there exploring the world and making commentary on
it.
Also being funny in a way. And then you would do, I mean, you would just have such great commentary, and I really appreciate it. I think you helped shape the way that I think about a lot of things, because I'm just a young kid in a messed up home watching TV late at night and reruns. And, you know, there's Lewis Black. I like what this guy has to say for whatever reason. You really did.
Because it was the last moment I'm the last guy, one of the last guys whose career was created by television.
Yes. Because
then we move out,
into the wild fucking West.
And then we go, it all changes. So that it's on the phone, it's on this, it's on that. It's on the computer. And but it really was that. And so everything really does kind of go through a sea change. I mean, because Dave and I and Mitch Hedberg did one of the first comedy tours outside of the blue collar. Blue collar. And we went out before. And then the other tour that was done with Cedric the Entertainer. And,
right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The King of Kings of Comedy. Yeah.
So, you know, we're the first ones to kind of go do that. And it was huge. It was huge for me because then I transitioned immediately into a comic who's working theaters. So I kind of follow in that path that Carlin did, which was a big break.
It was a well-worn path at that time. Now, and to no discredit, no disservice to these comics, they reach an audience by finding the audience through social media. They put it out there and people find them and they say, that's my taste, that's my flavor, I like that. And then they're filling rooms. And some of them do it beautifully. Some of them make that transition from, you know, online comic to theater comic beautifully. And then others, you know, understandably, just like life, you know, you take a few swings and sometimes you miss, right?
Well, yeah. It's weird. I mean, you got it boggles my mind. You got a comic who establishes themselves on TikTok. Is somebody fucking kidding me? I mean, I can't really yell. I mean, I established myself on, you know, Comedy Central with 2.5 minute things. But still, you kind of go, but I'm also, while I'm doing that, I'm going around the country playing clubs, you know, and building an audience. And it really is a different. They built an a lot of them built an audience immediately, which is really huge.
It's insane. We've had some of them on our show, and they're greatly successful comics, really funny people with great senses of humor, and they came from the world of I was nobody, then I had a million followers on Tuesday, and now I'm playing theaters, right? And I say this often, but the great Eddie Brill, who booked Letterman for a while. Brill, when I was speaking with him as a friend, he said one time, like, if a comic builds a great 45-minute set, 45 minutes to an hour in their lifetime, and that gets noticed, they've been a success, right? He said, it's the ones who do it over and over and over again that become legends. And he said, that's the hard thing to do. And and I think it is because like, I don't know who was it Sam Morril or somebody said to us, a musician can go out and play, you know, Eagles can go play Hotel fucking California till they literally are rolled off stage.
They didn't play the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, but
comics can't do that.
You do a special and then people hear those same jokes. They're like, well, fuck, I already heard that one. You know, it's like, it's kind of miserable. You have been doing comedy specials all through the pandemic. I saw your pre-pandemic or right as the pandemic was happening special.
The next day we shut down.
Wow.
March 13th. Our first episode was March 15th. So it was before you. Yeah. March 13th. And that was like, so I watched it, years ago. And then I watched it again last week or something. I watched it. And it's like a time capsule.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. And to hear your commentary on the things that are going on, like almost in real time as this ball started rolling, is a real throwback. And it's kind of a shock to the system a little bit. It's like, wow, shit was really fucked up and scary back then.
I literally walked on stage and was, thanks for risking your life. That was the first thing I said to the audience. I had no idea what my opening line would be, but I knew we were fucked. And it was coming at 1,000 miles an hour. And then it was like, do you want to fly through Chicago? No, that's the first place that somebody got it. I'm an idiot. And then what was interesting was to then do the bookend. It was after the pandemic, you know, when I can do it after the pandemic. And I wanted to do that because I felt that the two of them together, basically, I'd never done anything like this where it was just out of just a historical context. Who the fuck? here's a historical fucking comedy thing.
Seriously.
Lewis White presents the Civil War. It was crazy. But some of the stuff that the blowback I got over things I said, it was like, oh, just stop it. Okay. I was talking about how it affected me because I went on the road afterwards and I thought, I'm going to just paddle a while. I'm going to basically just talk about how I responded to the pandemic, which was not good. I did not handle it well. And I started saying, and the audience was laughing. And I just went, okay, then they get it. And if that's the case, then I should record this because everybody, you know, 80% of the people went through it and the other 20% didn't believe it happened. And those people, I wish, would be locked up. And
Hey, listen, locked up
fuckers, because you were crazy.
It's changing history, you know, arguing over some detail over Gettysburg. Okay, you know, we can all have that argument to the day that we die. Arguing history that happened 30 fucking seconds ago seems like just pure balls out insanity to me. Do you know what I'm saying? It's a different kind of brass potatoes. It's just fucking insane. And you're right. Like 20% of the people just didn't believe it happened. They were just believed it was some sham going on. And I think there's still a lot of people that do. But when you watch his first special, then you watch the second one, and I just want to make sure I got the name right. It's Tragically, I Need You, right? Yeah. Okay. So it's Tragically, I Need You. It's available on YouTube to anybody that wants to go watch it. And thanks for risking your life. What's that?
It's free.
It's 800-pound gorilla, which we've had so many of those specials on our show. So when you watch those two, it is a bookend. You see, you can remember just how scary March 13th fucking 2020 was. And then you can see how we all handled it, or some of us didn't choose to handle it, chose to bury our heads in the sand. And it was really very interesting. And I thought it was well done. I really do.
Well, thank you.
Now, are you done after this tour for reals?
Yeah. What I'm done with is touring.
But you'll still do special events.
I'll come out like, of course, as soon as I said I'm done, then it's like, well, what do you mean you're done? Well, you're not, you know, I'm competing for space that I wasn't competing for before. And I like to be, you know, and it makes touring on a bus, which is what I've been doing for years, become more difficult because it used to be we go from point A to point B. And they were like this, and now it's point A to point B is up there.
Right.
It's just madness. So I can't do it. I want to write more. I want to be able to go back and write. I want to write a play again. I want to write a book, maybe. And then I'll show up and do stand-up. I mean, like, my good friend is Kathleen Madigan, and she was working down.
I love her.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah,
she's, for my money, she's the best comic out there working. And she had a show in Atlantic City, and I went down and did 10 minutes. That'll do. As I said to her, if you want me to open, I'll come in and open. That's great. Just buy me a bottle of wine. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Exactly.
That kind of stuff. And then, you know, if something comes up and there's a bunch of things that I've collected that I think I need to comment on, I'll go to a show. But I'm not going to do 100 shows a year anymore.
Yeah, that's too much.
Well, I hope you do, because, you know, Hedberg gone, Carlin gone, Pryor gone, you know, and all gone too soon. And I think you're one of the great minds in comedy. I think you're one of the great realityists of our time. And I don't mean that in like a reality show kind of way. Yeah. I mean, you have a way of just saying things that open the eyes and go, oh yeah, you're fucking right. And so, and I want to tell you that I really appreciate your impression on me as a young man and through my life. And I think you're one of the greats, Lewis Black. And I hope you continue to keep that mind fertile and sharing it with us when you can, even if it's on fucking TikTok.
I'll do the rant cast. I still do a rant cast every week where I just yak. It's tougher because I really need an audience to help me figure out what's funny, because otherwise I'm just thinking about it. But I really like is that I read the rants of every, you know, whatever folks send in. So, and it's been great. And I think as it rolls along, it'll get better and better because people really, just before the shit hit the fan, the level of the writing that was coming it, my way was extraordinary because they figured out my voice.
Yeah.
Without me kind of doing it on a, and I was doing it at the, I was doing literally 25 minutes after the show. So it was crazy because I was doing like 70 minutes and another 25, which is a totally different energy.
Jesus. Yeah.
It was just, you know, and I really wanted it almost as you got to be higher with the energy because I'm reading these folks' things. And so I've been getting those out now and that continues, that will continue to happen.
I love that.
Rantcast, lewisblack.com. You can see him on his tour. He's on tour through the end of the year. If you live in a city, he's likely coming somewhere close to that. It's worth the drive. And I'll tell you what, get the fuck you tickets, because if you get a fuck you ticket to Lewis Black's final tour, then you also go down in legendary. The F-U-C-K-U tickets, yes, I should say that
it
correctly.
It's also, you don't have to deal with, it's an extraordinary, it's what we did so that you didn't have to deal with Ticketmaster or scalpers, and you get tickets in the first 10 rows and you pay $20, which is less than what you're going to pay. And then if something happens, there's somebody you actually call and talk to.
It's nice. Brilliant.
Yeah.
It's been
it's
great.
Brilliant. Fuck the Ticketmaster overlords, even though they are also doing our tickets for live shows. So not so much fucking, but you know, kind of fucking, half fucking. Yeah. Half fuck Ticketmaster. Lewis, thank you so much.
Thank
we really
you.
Appreciate
wow.
you here today with us.
That was incredible.
Every minute. Thank you.
Well, you can come back after you get done with the tour. If you ever want to, you know, do
rant.
2.5 minutes of rant.
Yeah.
This door is open all day long.
Well,
I promise
right.
you that.
Just, and if you want me, just call because I got no life.
Oh, trust me. You said it. And now I will. Yeah. Now you're going to be like, who's this fucking asshole? Keeps calling my agent.
It was really a pleasure. To
no, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you're the
that
best.
Was great.
The great Lewis Black. Go see him on tour.
Cheers.
Hello, my fans. I mean, Brian and Chrissy's fans. Boy, have I got news for you. We are officially coming to Florida for TCB Live. That's right, you can come see Brian's bald head shining under the stage lights at Dania Beach Improv, Tuesday, September 24th, and at the Funny Bone in Orlando on Wednesday, September 25th. If you can't make it to see us in person, text us or call us at 212-433-3TCB and leave us a little love note instead. As always, please, please, please follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCB Podcast. Our content is shockingly good, so get after it. And you already know I put every single one of those links in the show notes. You're welcome.
His agent better turn off the phone and hide under the couch, because if you don't think for one fucking second that I'm not calling Mr. Lewis, the great Lewis Black, every third day to see when he's coming on back on the show, you got to be wrong. Can you imagine Lewis Black on the commercial break does his little 2.5, 10 minute, whatever it is. He can have the whole fucking episode for all I care. He does that rant here on the commercial break. Like
oh, yeah.
He really does a rant. I just, it would be the honor of my life. I could say that we finally made a good episode. I could say
right.
We finally made an episode worth actually listening all the way through. And I'm going to put them right at the end, so you fuckers have to listen to the whole thing.
Lewis Black segment.
Yeah, the Lewis Black segment. Wow. Lewis,
the great.
Yes, TCB and LB. Yeah. I don't know. The
we'll
that be?
We'll work on that.
Yeah, TGLB. Well, that's kind of, I don't know. TCB
welcome to the
and TGLB. Hoo-ha, hoo-na. Lewis Black on the block. I don't even know what to say. I just love the guy.
He's incredible. We could have talked to him forever.
He's still sharp, man. He's so sharp. I hope I'm that sharp. I know I'm not going to be that sharp because I'm already not that sharp. And I'm many years, not many years, but I'm, you know, at least 7 years younger than he is.
Yes.
Oh, God. Lewis
he
Black.
Is sharp.
LewisBlack.com. That's where you can get your tickets to his final tour. I mean, if I'm saying this with like all sincerity and authenticity. If there is one comic that you have to see before he stops doing it or she stops doing it, there are a few that are still living and doing it. But this is like right at the top of the list. Lewis Black is so great and so thought-provoking. It's not that just that you get comedy. It's that you get perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like a realist and a pragmatist, and he doesn't give a shit what side of the aisle you're on. He's going to offend you equally. And that's what I love about him, is that it's not about who you're voting for. Even though, you know, when you're listening to him on this interview, it might seem like he favors one side, and maybe he does, but he equally offends everybody because he knows that life is mediated in the middle, mm-hmm. just like I happen to believe. It's not about right or left. It's about the middle, because that's where everyone fucking really is.
It really is.
So yeah. Listen to me. Now I sound like Lewis Black. Okay.
He's
so
incredible.
LewisBlack.com. Thank you for risking your life. Or tragically, I do need you. Both available on YouTube, on his channel, for free. Millions of views already. It's not like he needs us, but, you know, if you want to go watch it, I highly suggest that you do.
I'm going to.
Oh, you have to, Chrissy. I watched the first special, the one as COVID, because, you know, you and I started our podcast 2 days later.
No, it's
we
crazy.
Recorded our first show 2 days later. You can't get that show anymore because I took it off the RSS feed, but it's there somewhere. It's there somewhere. And so it's like a snapshot in time. And I do remember how crazy it was. And I also do remember that I felt a little bit better about it because we were doing this show. Like there was some kind of
definitely
lighthouse in the ocean. And I got to do that once a week. Do you remember that?
One time a week.
I think we recorded our first one on March 15th, and then we released our first episode on like April. We released that episode on like April 13th. It took me a month. Took me a month to get that out the door. That's fucking insane. All right, LewisBlack.com for tickets. Go watch the specials. You know how to do it. Also, come see our live shows, which will be nowhere near as good as his live shows. But hey, you know.
You got to start somewhere.
I don't know what to tell you. You got to start somewhere. I'm never going to be as good as Lewis Black, but you also don't have to pay as much to see us. So, you know, if you have to pick or choose, go see him. But if you have a few dollars left over, come see us. At the Bone on the 25th in Orlando. Not funny bone. At the Bone. And at the Dania Beach Improv on the 24th, the night before, in between Fort Lauderdale and Miami. So we're going to call it Miami. We'll just call it that. Even though it's in Dania Beach, which is
Miami
in Dania Beach.
Like Fort Miami Lauderdale.
Yeah, Fort Miami Lauderdale. That's right. Fort Miami Lauderdale Beach Improv. tickets now available on their websites, on our websites, and if you go to Instagram, link in bio bullshit. So you can go there, click on the link, and you can buy tickets to both shows. We would love to see you there. 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Text us. Questions, comments, concerns, content, ideas. Let us know if you're going to be at the show. TCBpodcast.com for more information, all the audio, all the video. Add the commercial break on Instagram. TCB Podcast on TikTok and YouTube.com/TheCommercialBreak. All right, Chrissy. That's all I can do for today.
I think so.
I love you.
And I love you.
Best to you.
Best to you.
And best to Lewis Black and everyone out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, we always say, we must say, and we do say,
goodbye.